the best coaches in the game. We really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block, helmets casket is top. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision. We got.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Hitting Bombs Off the Tee PGA podcast. It's a new one. Breaking down the Charles Schwab Classic. My name is Kevin Allen, aka The Geek. I'm here to host, to ask the questions, and to learn. And I've got the two PGA goats of DFS here with me. Everybody knows and loves my man, DFS Up North, aka Josh. What's up, my man?
What's going on?
Not too much. I'm excited. Live.
We're back.
Sports action, finally.
Right.
Now, we got the wizard of the numbers, the Swami of statistics. Taco DFS in the house. What's up, Taco?
Yo, what's up?
Now, Taco does not share.
Ready for this.
Yeah, you're excited for this? You got how many? There's 9 NASCAR races this week. There's about 14 different PGA slates.
They have 2 days with back-to-back races. It's fun. It's a joy this week. First time I've ever had a NASCAR race the day before a PGA lock. That's new. That is brand new.
It's actual insanity. Taco hasn't slept in 5 days, people. This is what we do for you. Okay? I was on the League of Legends last night at 3 a.m. Taco was not on.
Wow.
First time in a long time.
Yes, very busy around here.
That is some serious stuff. So we're here to break down the Charles Schwab Classic. And before we get into it, Josh, you were just telling me off air, I was trying to understand why no one has a course history here.
Right.
And can you explain kind of what's going on here?
Yeah. So, I mean, typically this event is a second tier PGA Tour event, meaning that a lot of the stud guys aren't coming here and playing. It's a difficult course in Texas in the middle of, you know, typically this is, you know, in the middle of summer. It's not too far from its original date, and it's not a fun event to play for a lot of guys to come to Fort Worth and play in 90 degree heat and wind. And so yeah, typically guys don't play this, but now that it's you know, now that we're back and golf is back, everybody's showing up, and it's you know, they do the official world golf ranking gives out points based on the strength of the field, and the strength of the field here is actually just under 2 times stronger than it was last year at this event. It's up in the 700s, which is what we typically see for like a major, and that's really what it's going to look like, I think, kind of going forward here. Is we're going to see a lot of events where, you know, it looks like according to Twitter today, Tiger's yacht has traveled from his home base up the shore to the RBC Heritage. So they're saying that he might be playing there next week. And that's like not an event that he's never played in his career. So we're going to see lots of different, we're going to see lots of really strong fields, and we're going to see guys without much course history playing some of these events. So it's kind of exciting.
And recent form out the window, unless recent form is sitting, you know, either playing some outlaw golf or sitting at home playing golf.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, you know, I've been looking at some of these guys' social media and trying to figure out, like, hey, who's been practicing, who's been doing stuff. But it's a crapshoot. There's not really anything quantifiable for any of it.
Very interesting. And Taco, this presents an interesting challenge from a projecting standpoint.
Heck yeah. Reminds me a lot of the Sony Open. You know, the first actual event of the year, except it does not have a loaded field like this. You know, we usually see them kind of straggle in. Maybe it's more like the WGC event in China, where all the good players kind of play randomly in like October after like a 2 month layoff for most of them. But even then, we haven't had a stretch like this where people just haven't been playing at all, because usually when the PGA Tour is off, you see guys like Rory and that go over to European Tour. Usually that's kicking over there to finish their race to Dubai. So, yeah, this is – I'm sure we're all tired of hearing the word unprecedented, but that is what it is for sure.
The amount of unprecedented things that have happened in the last 3 months is unprecedented.
It absolutely is.
See how
it's fun to think about.
Now, Taco, when you don't have course history, really, we don't really have recent form. We do have knowledge of the statistical strengths and weaknesses of each golfer versus the sort of intricacies of this course, which we're going to get into. But do you lean heavily on the projected top 20, top 10 and win odds here for projecting purposes, just to say, hey, Vegas knows their shit, let's go with what they say?
So usually the guys at the top project a lot higher than the rest of the field, even in these stronger fields like this. I had to make sure that everyone's pretty close, because I don't think the top guys aren't going to have as much of an advantage as they usually would, I would imagine. But at the same time, it's just so volatile, so kind of unpredictable. It's hard to really say who's going to be doing well. We don't have much to go off of. And we do have course history. It's the same course history as we would have every year. So, I mean, logically, you'd kind of lean on that a little bit more than you might normally, because this event is one of the most consistent events on the PGA Tour. Done like the same time every year, the same place, same golf course. And a lot of guys do have really solid history here. Like the Texas kid, Jordan Spieth.
I was going to say, Jordan Spieth. So, I mean, you can look through the course history tab on the research station, which I'm obsessed with. You know, what I do for PGA is I look at recent form and course history first, second, and that's like everything. So I look at the research station, and I'm just looking at these two sections here, and I'm like, all right, this guy's been – oh, there he is, Jordan Spieth. Yeah, I didn't need you to tell me that. If I just glance here, Kevin Na.
Ooh. Defending champ.
That's my guy too, Kevin Na. So I like to look at that, and I like to compare it with recent form. And like, if they're good at the course and they're playing well lately, then that's a good thing.
Of course, like we said, though, a lot of these golfers have just never played here, especially the best ones.
And course history will affect ownership a lot more than usual, right, this week, I'm pretty sure. So
I think so, too.
It's about playing that meta game. You know, it's really tempting to look at a guy like Spieth or Harmon or Na and go, well, I mean, they're just really good here. Play them. It's not a bad idea, but in GPP tournaments, if you want to win it all, it's probably not the best way to go about it. You probably just want to find those low-owned guys that are just as good as guys next to them that are being 3-4 times as high-owned for no reason.
I mean, on that same note, is it possible that Spieth has been good just because he's the only like elite kind of golfer that likes to play at this course, rather than to say he's really great at this specific course? So on that note, Josh, what are the intricacies of this course, Fort Worth, Texas? It's hot. Well, balls is hot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have a point there, that, you know, some of these guys that have showed up here every single year, and maybe they get comfortable, they play well at this event, and they don't really, and we see that they have this weird rule that, like, if you've won here before 2001, you get like an invite every single year. So we have like some rando old guys that show up and get a spot every year. Yeah, like Keith Clearwater way down there.
Those guys.
Yeah, like he's got the course record here from like 1994. But yeah, you see these same guys.
I need to understand from a business point of view.
Yeah.
He comes, he plays, he gets cut. Does he make any money?
No.
It's not like NASCAR where you can just
show up and make money. Yeah.
The start and parks make nothing.
If you miss the cut, you get nada.
Bye bye.
You get nothing.
But yeah, so like
the greens fees or
no, you know, I mean, they used to have PGA Tour entry fees, but now I don't think they do anymore. Mm-hmm.
You know, but once they're probably here picking up a lot of the golden girls. I mean, if you go to a golf event, a lot finest of woman you will ever see in every age range. A lot of money. Big truth there.
All gold diggers. All of them.
Now, something else I've noticed, if you look at the odds drifts, almost all the odds drifts this week are based on course history. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, so we were just talking about that.
Better seem to be betting based on just course history, because it's all really have to go off of. So that's probably where ownership is going to go.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Bryson DeChambeau, I mean, just I'm looking at, he's terrible here. And
yeah, bad course history. So he's falling in odds, even though he was red hot when we left off.
Yep.
And
I feel
like DeChambeau streaky.
I feel like if you're red hot pre-corona, It's completely meaningless.
It's hard to take any stock in.
Yeah. This is like a soft reset.
It really feels like it. All right. So, Josh, break down this course.
Yeah.
What's the story here?
Yeah. So it's a par 70. So that means that we have two more par threes and two less, not two more par threes, but two less par fives, right? And two more par fours. So it's a somewhat long course, but the hallmark of Colonial is that it's very tree lined. So that means that you really got to find yourself either in the fairway or way off of the fairway if you're going to be able to attack these greens, because you're going to get into limb trouble, and you're a lot of times you're going to have to punch out. So there's a big emphasis on like fairways and greens here, meaning that you're guys that have some accuracy, and you've seen in sort of the players that have won here, you know, it's the winners have had really good accuracy in the fairways, and then really good greens and regulations, and then kind of a hot putter. But there are other ways to get it done. You know, Tony Finau was second last year. He didn't hit a ton of greens, or didn't hit a ton of fairways, and was able to kind of maybe overpower the course a little bit. But you really got to be careful, you know, where you're positioning off the tee. And that's where, you know, course history does seem to benefit some of these guys here in the past, because they know their way around the course. That's not to say that, you know, because Rory's never played here, he's not going to do well. He's the best player in the world, right? But it's the other thing about this course is that we're in Fort Worth. We're looking at the weather for the week, right? It's 90 every single day at 4 o'clock. They've been watering, for lack of a better term, watering the shit out of the course, trying to keep it, because if they don't, they're going to lose these greens. So what I expect to see is that you're going to see some scoring in the morning. And then by the time that gets to the afternoon, unless they're coming in and watering these greens in between groups, which I don't foresee them really doing unless it gets really bad, you're going to see a hard baked out course in the afternoon. And that's going to make for harder scoring conditions. So, you know, for showdown, we want to, you know, maybe target some of those guys that are off early in the morning on Thursday and Friday, instead of, you know, playing some of the studs in the afternoon, because the conditions just look a little bit harder. And then we're in Texas, you know, in the plains, there's going to be wind. It doesn't look like it really too bad early in the week, maybe a little bit Friday afternoon, but, you know, there's the old narrative Australians in Texas, just because they're used to playing in the wind. So guys like Mark Leishman, I think, makes some sense this week, even though he's seen a pretty big odds drift backwards.
Leishman, one of the more expensive guys. Now, you mentioned the range situation, or the greens being baked, and so my understanding from what you're saying is, if it's super dry and the greens are all baked up, right?
Yep.
Then it's really hard to get that ball to stop kind of where you want it to, and rather it just kind of like rolls past, and it's the putting and all that stuff is harder. Is that
correct? Yeah, for sure. It's going to be the greens are just, they're not as receptive. They're going to be harder. The ball's not going to stick, and then it's going to roll off, and it's going to, you know, the greens should be a little bit faster in the afternoon as well. And now the other thing that, I mean, it's not a narrative that I'm necessarily going to follow, but there's no fans here, right? So wayward drives are maybe not going to get kicked back by a fan, or it's not going to catch a fan and stay in play. And then the grandstands around the greens. Jim Furyk was talking earlier this week that, you know, he's never seen the backside of a lot of greens on the PGA Tour, because there's always a grandstand there. So he doesn't even know what's back there. So if they fly the green at a normal event, like meaning that they hit the ball over past the green, it's going to run into the grandstand and bounce back. They're going to get a free drop and they're going to be fine. Now without that there, like that could roll off forever.
So extra danger for the afternoon crew. Unfortunately, though, because they switch times,
right,
day one and day two, that's really not a strategy we can mess with too much.
Not for 4 day. For showdown, it's something that I think you need to look at.
Yeah, I love it for short showdown. And of course, the showdown goat here, breaking that down. Now, Taco, what statistic in the research station here can I use to get, like, guys, I guess it sounds like, rather than being long off the tee, we want accuracy off the tee. Is that greens in regulation?
That would be driving accuracy percentage.
Driving accuracy.
It's percentage. Also accounted for in stroke scans off the tee overall. Usually you see an inverse relationship between distance and accuracy. And you'll notice that the guys that don't play this event, they kind of have something in common. Rory, Jason Day. They don't care to be accurate. They don't really like going to places where you have to be accurate off the tee.
All right, just so I'm fully familiar with this. You're saying driving accuracy above driving distance is what we want to concentrate on. Is that correct?
Like, yeah.
This is so. A bit right here.
Although most of the good golfers in golf generally have really long driving distance, because recently, over like the last 10 years or so, distance has taken over as the players get better and better. You know, just being able to hit it longer is a huge benefit to you.
Well, it says here that Jim Furyk.
Hey, make yourself a copy, man. That's the best way to do this.
You know what? I'm trying on, to do this geek. on live stream.
And I get
I snuck the tee times in there, by the way. Like, I just did that. I just snuck the tee times in there.
Oh, nice.
I just remember Furyk posted.
The live version will help.
All right. So you mentioned Furyk, right, Geek?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So Furyk has played here 22 times. Not surprisingly, this course fits his eye because he's very accurate off the tee and not super long. So he's had some success here. He's actually has the lowest average score for anybody that's played here that many times.
Wow. See, just taking that info. Hang on. Let's get this sorted now appropriately.
Use the little triangles right there. The seventh row. Or seventh.
There you go. Z-day.
Yeah, row.
All right. Give me that.
That's how
give
we do it.
Score. Come on.
So if you start by driving accuracy, you're going to get a lot of old people, a lot of people short off the tee. See the driving distance numbers all in the 280s, 270s, maybe 290s.
But I mean, there are some combinations like Matthew Fitzpatrick. Okay.
Yeah. He's definitely an accuracy specialist. He's a European tour player, so he doesn't play as often as others. That's why he has less events played, rounds played.
Brendan Todd, 18th last year.
Todd is an interesting story.
Came back from the dead.
Yes, he was an awful player for 2 or 3 years. Could never make
it. So bad.
Just won event after event last.
Yeah, he went back to back and almost won three in a row.
It's just insane.
I'm getting from from the comments section. Kisner and Poulter.
Come on, headphones.
So interesting. I just like it. I like to sort by these columns, just to pick out some of these guys that really, really stand out. So first you've got these, you'll see driving accuracy type, Shea Reavy. Okay. But that's just part one, right? You got a little Danny Berger over here. Good stuff.
What else am I looking at when I'm trying to pick out and figure out, okay, who should I target for my DraftKings, my FanDuel, my Super Draft team? What other statistics should I be looking at, guys?
Taco, do you want to take it? You want me to?
You take it, Josh.
Okay. So, I mean, my favorite statistic is if you sort there, projected fantasy points per round under fantasy scoring stats. So what that does is that is going to tell you. So when Taco does his projections, it looks at each hole type. So like for this course, I believe there's like seven. And you can on the bottom, it's under the fantasy scoring as well, where it breaks it down by hole, but it just takes every single hole on the course, breaks it down by how many fantasy points they gain on that type of hole. So it's really telling you who is the best course fit. It's like I couldn't play DFS fantasy golf if I didn't have this statistic. Like that's how much like I how much weight I put into the projections here from Taco and then this stat. It really tells you I think who is going to be playing well at this course, or who should play well given, you know, in a bubble. That's important what he wrote. Yeah.
I am loving this. First of all, shit, that's gold information.
Yeah.
Fantasy scoring per hole. Now, here's what's interesting to me as I sorted by that. I like to look at the salary. So when I do a sort like that, I'm like, all right, then what? Right. So now I'm looking at the salaries to identify some interesting value plays. Now, obviously, Rory comes up first overall. He's the best guy, and he's probably the best play. Okay. That's fine. But I start to see names like Victor Hovland.
Yep.
Sebastian Munoz. Dennis McCarthy. What the hell is Denny McCarthy doing here? This guy shouldn't be here. What the hell is
the guy races, and he comes out and putts on like on fire every week.
Like, what the hell's going on here?
You can get more insight here by going into the fantasy scoring tab.
Okay.
This course has an absurd number of, medium par fours and long par threes. So if you're good at those two, like Hovland's third in the field in long par threes. There are four of them here. And pretty good at the medium, like par fours.
Number of long par threes that exist on this course?
Correct.
Yes.
And SG is shots gained. So this tells me how good they are.
That's strokes gained to the field.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Very on good. Average.
Look who's very good.
Victor Hovland. Yeah, that's why he bumps up.
Okay. Yeah.
And I like, especially that, of course, with like long par threes, what that tells me is that, you know, all these par threes are right around 200 yards. And that's going to be a distance of an approach shot that you're going to see on a lot of these medium par fours and long par fours too. So if guys mm-hmm. are playing well on these long par threes, that tells me that, hey, their iron play is really solid. So I have a little bit more confidence in them, even if maybe they don't score as well on some of those other holes.
Now, do you think it's crazy if I think that I would look for the people who are really good at par fives and almost like want to discount them and say, all right, you know, Xander, Justin Thomas, you know, some of these names that are really good on long and short par fives, where I'm like, you know what, let me fade them because the thing that they're really, really good at, we don't have much of here.
Right.
Well, the thing is, fantasy scoring comes from par fives.
That's the hard
part. And then par threes are where the least amount of fantasy scoring comes. Just by nature, you're always going to have higher scoring averages on par threes. A lot harder to get birdies. And of course, it's way, way harder to get eagles on par threes. You have to hit a hole in one, as where eagles on par fives are not that rare. Definitely not that rare. So you usually have like three or four par fives on the course, but with only two, yes, they're not as important. So scores are going to be closer. That's right. What we usually see on par 70s. And you can actually see in the on the main page in the field rank splits, it shows how good people do on par 70s in general, along with in strong fields.
Wait, there's another strokes gain. Where is this?
Oh, that's just on the main page.
Yeah, go to the main page.
Under the field rank.
Scroll over to where it says field rank splits.
And there's
I have one for par 70s.
By the way, one of the great things about DFS Army, these research stations for every sport allow you to dive in as deep as you want into the numbers, into the stats, figure out angles. Like, I don't even, I could tell about NASCAR things and sort of like,
there's
completed numbers and just shit that people aren't looking at.
Right. And I think that like, especially like with our research stations, you know, there's other tools out there and other sites and things like that, that have like all these stats that you can compile and you can sort yourself and do by a million things. And like, we kind of take that guesswork out of it for you, because you can constrain your data so much that you end up getting something that like makes zero sense, so that's what I really love about our research stations, is that Taco does, like, he puts in like field rank for par 70s and things like that, that really take a lot of the guesswork out.
It's designed with the player in mind, instead of sorting through a whole bunch of stuff where you're like, what am I even supposed to be looking at? Now, Travis Duarte, I'm going to address this question because it's a good question here. And Alex Kanger actually answered it in the chat, but I want to talk about it. Can we fade the big three and still have a chance? And the answer
that question upsets me a little bit, because Webb Simpson is right there in fourth. That is the most consistent golfer in all of golf. How is he not a big something by now? Come on. Webb is so ridiculously good. So consistent. And he has been for so long. Ever since he learned how to putt.
And yet he's
like, that's Benny On's future right there.
This hopefully. Is a guy who's owned just the generally recent. Now, he doesn't have, well, he's got a third place and a fifth place on this course.
Click on the field rank tracker at the bottom. That's a good way to look at extended form and just get a solid picture of how guys are doing. Just look at these guys up top. You'll see. Webb, just green as could be.
Lots of green. That means that he beat the field, or he beat, 97% of the field, or whatever it says there.
So you see all the field sizes are different. You have some that are 70, some that are 150-something. It all... That's just a way of putting it all together
and seeing it by percentage. It.
Just see what percentage of people that you beat.
So what I'm looking for the cheap guys who are beating everyone, like this Henry Higgs guy. You know what I mean? Like, this is Harry where
Higgs.
I'm going.
Harry Higgs is very, very good.
He doesn't button up his shirt at all. He's got he's kind of a little chunky. He's got huge lamb chops. Like, the guy's got some swag.
Love the lamb chops. You can also see how, what kind of fields they've been in. They've just been in super easy fields. The guys are playing hard fields.
Harry Higgs.
He's in my sheet. I like him this week.
Lamb chops. Little chubby.
Little chubby. He's got doesn't button up his shirt. Goes all the way down to here.
This is my guy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How did you know I don't button my shirt up? Was this a V-neck? How did
you know? You don't have to button a V-neck. That's why they're so good.
Yeah.
I always, guys, this is a life tip, all right? Because this isn't just about, this isn't just about DFS and crushing fantasy golf. This is about life. Never, ever, always leave one extra button. Don't get inappropriate, but like one extra button open. A little air. Nothing worse than buttoning the top button either. Never do that. All right.
Feels like a small child is slowly strangling you.
But yeah, you hey, like you can go, you can fade the top three. Like this is golf, like Kanger said. Like it is, hey, it's cold in my basement. Yeah. I just saw him write that.
This is the best week to fade anyone.
Yeah, you anybody
I can like, ever remember.
Feel
so this fade is the greatest week to just be different.
I want to harp on this point because a lot of people are going to be playing golf, fantasy golf this week that haven't played it before. And so part of the reason we're doing this one and adding me into the mix even is so I can ask questions from the perspective of somebody who's not really somebody bringing expertise in PGA, but rather, hey, I want to play it. Who should I play? I already got Harry Higgs written down.
The fact that you're asking that kind of is an, it's part of the whole equation this week.
Right.
I think so let's it's kind of weird for me as someone who is supposed to give people plays. But honestly, if I see someone, if I see a golfer being touted this week, that makes me like them less with more of the public involved in a field like this, like way more of the public involved. People are going to be following optimizers, following touts, following plays that are recommended.
And we have a Millie Maker, which brings even more randos in on DK.
And there's not that much difference between them and like a guy right next to them with the same odds. You know, there's we usually have a lot more to go off of than that. I mean, this is just the week to be different. And I kind of almost don't want to give out like plays. Well, you know, it's weird for me.
We can say a play is, listen, this guy is going to be highly owned.
Right.
And so, and a broad overview of the course would be, listen, nobody knows a damn thing about what's going to happen. There's no reason for him. Everybody's been in the house. You're eating sandwiches. You're getting fat. You're lucky if you played at all, any golf over the last few months. You got your mask on. It's not a thing. So everything goes out the window. So then it comes down to, all right, well, if everybody, like, let's look at the ownership projections real quick, because this is also a very, very important component.
No one over 20%, which is rare, super rare.
Everybody low owned, but your boy Webb Simpson, highest owned.
Yeah.
You got Rory, John Rahm. I guess these guys are sort of the studs.
I'm seeing Webb as the.
Yeah, I got Webb as the highest.
Yeah, Webb came up 18%.
I'm seeing him too much on the cover of articles and videos, like on thumbnails, man. That's poor Webb. I want to play Webb so bad. You can't really do it. Maybe Harry cash. But
at 18% ownership, no go.
No point.
Well, because you got to think of it. This how I think of it is, you know, you got to get leverage on the field somewhere, right? Like, so if I'm going to play Webb, then I need to have at least two, especially at his price tag. Like, I need two, maybe 3x the field. So now I'm talking like, okay, I need Webb in 40 to 50% of my lineups. And if I'm not willing to make that sort of commitment to a guy, then I'll just have zero.
Interesting.
Usually I have like 40% max on guys. This week it's probably like 25% max. If there's a play I can find that I really like that I think I'm being sneaky with, but it's hard to put too much stock in one guy. At least in 4 day. But I have a strategy I'll probably talk about later involving the tiers. Basically, my plan would be to try to attack the lowest owned guys in tiers, calculate my ownership, and then use my 4 day to kind of hedge on that, and then show day to hedge on that even or showdown to hedge on that even further as we go.
All right. So you just mentioned tiers. And let me jump over to that real quick.
Yeah.
So for everybody watching, and so you understand what we have going on, DraftKings abruptly added tiers to the PGA product this event. They never had
it. They made it cry. They've been needing it.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've had to care about golf in a while.
I get, I mean, you know, it's been a bit, but you know, so you go to your contest types, you're gonna bring up tiers, okay? And you'll see, all right, here we go. We got tiers and we have contests. Now, we've been able to add tiers to the Domination Station using the NBA tiers tab. So for anybody who wants to play this and use the optimizer, it's all set up and it is very nice. And you could see the ownerships on there. But so strategically, I'm looking at tier one, Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Justin Thomas. Rory projected to be the highest owned. So is that an auto of Rory? You just jump right over to Rahm or Thomas?
Usually I like to pick on the guys I think are going to be the lowest owned or are lowest in the FPPG category. That's how I've always kind of played tiers on other sports, but I've never played them too seriously.
You just look at the average per game and just be like, because figure everybody looks at that.
Yeah. I mean, the top guys, like, you're going to have, you know, I think everyone's going to play Rory because he seems to come top 10 in damn near every event, but so does Rahm. So I kind of like Rahm there. Thomas does seem like he's at least a bit human in a sense. And people still like playing the crap out of Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
But I'd probably look to Thomas or Rahm there and get my Rory exposure in my 4-day probably.
Yeah, I think the same. And like the hard, like I have my cheat sheet up for this. And so I've kind of dived into the tiers a little bit today that it, especially like tier one and really even tier two, like as long as all three of them make the cut, it doesn't matter. Like as long as they don't win, like if they finish, say Rory finishes 10th and Rahm finishes 15th and Justin Thomas finishes 20th, the fantasy point gap is not likely to be that big, right? So you're not going to really, as long as they all make the cut, which I mean, they all are three of the best golfers in the world. Like it really shouldn't be a big deal. Like I like Rahm. I like him in 4-day. I like him everywhere. And typically, like I kind of wrote in my notes that, hey, I'd hedge here in tiers or showdown or something like that and not play Rahm. But I just have so much confidence in him this week that I'm kind of pushing my chips in on him. And in a week like this, I don't mind making that sort of aggressive play, I guess.
I mean, I feel like your differentiation in tiers is should be coming more from like 3-4, like this area. Like,
yep.
One of these two might beat the other one. They're both going to do well.
If everybody's within 10 points of each other, that's not going to be like, don't waste your time trying to, you know, pick one or the other. I don't think really.
Everybody's going to take Spieth, right? He's the GOAT of this course. So, I mean, it's really,
not so much because Spieth has struggled extremely over the last 2 years. We've seen his ownership on DFS just
plummet,
single digits every tournament. This would be the premier place to take him. I think he's going to get a bump here, especially because people like a lot of the pubs here, and they're going, "Oh, Spieth, I've seen him win multiple Masters. He's been on TV and stuff." But it's been no secret that over the last few years, he has struggled tremendously with basically every part of his game. He'd be the one high price guy that like consistently loses strokes approach, loses strokes off the tee. It's just been kind of ridiculous for him.
I remember a few years back when he was dominating everything, and
he'd be priced like Rory back then.
Yeah,
not so much anymore. The
next big deal, and then he just came back down to earth. You know what? The pressure of expectations is real. It's a real.
You seem pressure. To have been dealing with it. A lot of golfers just go through periods of times where they have what's called the yips. And my favorite golfer had it before, and he just started missing every cut out of nowhere. And then after that, once he got it figured out, he made like 30 cuts in a row. And it kind of happens. With Spieth, it seemed like he was always an extremely good putter, great short game, which is helpful here. But the rest of his game was kind of lacking. Then he focused so much on like his approach game, got his approach game decent. All of a sudden, he forgot how to putt. Then he goes, remembers how to putt and then forgets how to do everything else. That's kind of where we're at with him. But I do think like this break will probably actually be pretty good for a guy like him. I mean, he can be a bit of a head case in a sense. He's one of those golfers like DeChambeau or even Kevin Na is kind of that way. I'd put him in that category of golfers for better or worse.
Yeah. Such a psychological sport. I've had a case of the yips when I play golf. On the courts, pretty much.
This is the only sport where nobody affects you. This is 100% you. You can't say that about any other sport on the planet. Even like tennis, you're going up against somebody. Racing, you're the one driving, but there are the other guys around you. If you mess up, the only person you can really blame is your caddy. That's about it. Other than that, it's all you.
I do, but like
very mental sport.
What about the people in the stands? They yelled, they made a noise.
I have kicked the ball into the fairway for Justin Thomas before.
Really?
But not in competition, but it does happen, but it's hard to rely on that sort of stuff.
I like that. All right, so let's go through some of these golfers and give me some plays. I know it's very tough to really name a lot of plays, and sure. I know we're talking about how fading the projection ownership is probably the sharpest play of them all in a course like this where we don't really know what's going on, but
we do have some things to go on. We want those guys good at the medium length par fours. Maybe not a whole lot of people are going to be looking into that. Generally, having some course history here, having a yardage book is going to be helpful. You know, not having no course history kind of hurts a guy like Rory, just because there's something about having that yardage book at least, or at least knowing where to miss on certain holes that is helpful. And there are little things like that. We just don't want to eat the chalk up like crazy.
When I sort the research station by medium length par four,
yeah,
obviously you can't gain as much, as you guys mentioned before, as you could on a par five. That's where you do a lot of the fantasy scoring. And, you know, anybody who's followed DFS golf for a long time knows that you wait for your guys to get to the par five, hold, cross those fingers, give me that birdie, motherfucker. Come on, make the cut. You know, it's always that par five. Come on. Come on, Kevin Kisner. One birdie is all I ask. So as I sort here, a name that keeps popping up. I'm seeing a lot of the same names, but I'm telling you, this name keeps popping up.
And he's minimum price on FanDuel.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, somebody asked about
core play. I didn't realize the salaries messed up there.
Cash plays.
He's min priced on FanDuel?
Yeah, they were talking about cash plays for FanDuel, and Furyk's an absolute FanDuel core play because he's minimum price.
Why do I think he's going to wind up being the super draft core play, too? I haven't looked at the multiplier.
Oh, I don't know. I think he's only like 1.15.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, FanDuel just fucked up. Oops, sorry.
Okay, so you guys.
This is completely, like, anecdotal here, but every single time that FanDuel seems to minimum price,
yeah, that's
they're,
true.
Like, cursed. Yeah. Like Ryan Moore.
Wait, how come I can't see the
draft? I think I had pasted that in wrong.
Yeah, what's going on with the DraftKings pricing? But,
everything else.
Yeah, but Furyk is also cheap enough on DraftKings. He's a bargain on DraftKings. Sounds like he's pretty close to min salary on FanDuel, which is spectacular. But I'm seeing some other names. Like, I'm trying to look for guys who are, like, lower-cost guys. I mean, Louis Oosthuizen, that is, like, the ultimate.
You can see guys that score better on DraftKings and FanDuel there. Like, Jim Furyk scores better on FanDuel, which is great because you're going to play him on FanDuel. You're not really going to play him on DraftKings.
Yeah,
It is noteworthy that he hasn't been playing very good recently. He's very, very old. And
it's hard to take any stock in it, but he did just play like a mini event at St. Simon's Island and beat a bunch of guys in this field and finished second. Shot 65, 67. Good. So
it's nice to see some signs of life out of
right?
him.
Right? Yeah, he beat like JT Poston and a bunch of other guys.
What does the DraftKings versus FanDuel tab do, Taco?
Yeah, so that shows guys the average more expected fantasy points on DraftKings than FanDuel based on their scoring. And so I'm looking at what guys average DK scoring-wise and FanDuel scoring-wise on each hole type, and I average them out based on what kind of holes are on the course. And some of these guys, they don't have enough holes to qualify, so they get to sit at the bottom until...
Okay, they're the zeros.
Yeah.
But it looks like Charlie...
Hoffman, he scores a lot more eagles and gets a lot more bogeys, double bogeys. That's punished a lot more on it's punished a lot more on FanDuel's, or DraftKings is a lot more lenient with your guys getting bogeys, and they're definitely more rewarding of your guys birdieing. So I like noting that. I like when I'm choosing between the two sites to play. If you're playing both sites, a decent thing to look at there.
That's interesting. I love it. And again, back to the medium par four. We have seven medium length par fours, which are like the most common holes on any course anywhere.
Yeah. Strokes gained. That's just straight up strokes gained to the field. I kind of like using the DraftKings points there.
Oh, okay. So rather than strokes gained?
Yeah.
That's just average DraftKings points.
We get a little bit different. So Patrick Reed's another guy that's coming up a lot here. And now I want to see. So here's what I would do. And this is for everybody. Yeah, guys, they're saying good video, super explanatory. Yeah, I'm learning as we're going. I have not been a PGA player. So, like, for me, but I want to play it. So, like, I'm trying to understand what I'm looking for. So, here's what's interesting to me. So, we said the shots gained. So, I get some names here that are popping up, right? So, okay. I looked at the par four guys, and let's say I've got this group. Now, I want to pop over to here and go back to driving accuracy, for example.
Yeah.
And, or, greens and regulation. What's more important, greens and regulation, driving accuracy in this one?
Greens and regulation is usually always a bit more important, but we'd honestly probably use like stroke scanned approach even more than
either of those two.
That's probably the most important stat overall. It's on the right. Like scroll over.
Keep going.
Now you could just use, for the most part, you can use the fantasy scoring stats tab there, and that has all of the holes accounted for according to how they'll be on the course. So you can see the projected round score, projected fantasy points per round. It's all accounted for there. That tab you can use if you want to get into the nitty gritty, especially if at a place like this where certain hole types are very important. So I usually use it to find guys that are good at par five scoring for, you know, GPP upside.
Man, I think the guys we're looking for here are medium par four. You have no par fives here.
That's right? Almost half the course.
Yeah.
It's all medium par four. So I want this group. Now, the problem is you're talking about
that Scheffler was going to be popular, right?
And yeah.
You know, one little angle I see there. Scroll up a little bit. Scheffler is rated third in short par threes, but 113th in long par threes. Might be something to look at, you know. Medium par fours. That's his worst par four type scoring wise.
Yeah, he's a no for me this week.
Simpson, third in medium par fours, sixth in long par fours. Not great in the short par four, but, you know, I mean,
his these irons are so good. They're so good.
So, Sebastian Munoz, for example,
par 70 king.
He gets a lot of eagles, a lot of birdies, also a lot of bogeys. He doesn't like to par. Thinks parring's for chumps. That's why he rates out so high in DraftKings scoring.
He's not so high
in just strokes gained to the field.
This sounds like a Josh Showdown special right here.
We love some Munoz.
We love Munoz. We love Munoz at par 70s too. Like his field rank in par 70s is unreal. He shows up at these medium par fours and just crushes. So yeah, I really like Munoz this week.
Pen and paper. So far we got Harry Higgs and Munoz.
You can have all sorts of salary left.
I don't write down Rory McIlroy. That's fucking obvious.
No, the scrubs. I'm looking
for the name in the middle of the field. Number one, I want unbutton.
All right, I got another guy for you, Geek. All right, are you ready?
Is Gardner Minshew in this one?
He's not gonna show up in the statistics here because he doesn't play enough on the PGA Tour. But he's a core play for me this week at 7,300. His name's Christian Bezuthout.
He's the European Tour approach guy.
Yeah, he's so good. But his story is that he drank rat poison at 3 years old.
Yeah.
And he he can't talk. He stutters.
If he's on the leaderboard, you will hear that segment.
We'll talk about it a ton. So arguably, so like at the Players, he shot 7 under in the first round and then they canceled it. And, he's a stud that nobody's going to play.
I like that. Ownership projection. Let's go scroll over. Christian
Gesundheit. Very low. Here.
Ownership 3%.
Yeah, he's a stud. Odds
are pretty good, but he's definitely a not a household name at all. That is for sure. He just hopped over to the tour from the European Tour recently.
I like that. All right. So on that same topic, Josh, I'll start with you. Give me a couple more low-owned kind of names, unexpected, that you kind of think could have a good shot here. And Taco, as Josh is doing this, prepare because I'm coming to you next.
All right, let me bring up my sheet here. So I like right next to Bazunt Hout, I like Billy Horschel this week. He's unreal par 70 type player. He's I think too cheap at 7,400 on DraftKings. Like crushes these par 70s. He's an elite putter. He's an even better putter on bent grass. I don't like necessarily targeting guys who putt well all the time, but he's a guy who if he gets hot, he can fill it up and really be in the mix here. He's you know, finished 19th here last year on a pretty good run of form leading in. So that's another similar price guys. As we kind of go down the list, you know, getting into some of these cheaper plays, we talked about Munoz, we talked about Higgs. Victor Perez is another European guy that I really like that can make a ton of birdies.
Still one of mine.
Nobody's gonna play. You can talk about him. I like, oh, okay, so we can talk about Matthew Neesmith at 6,900. So Matt Neesmith is maybe, he's arguably one of the best iron players on tour. He's just come up from the Korn Ferry Tour. You scroll over to his strokes gained approach, he's almost gaining a full stroke approach. He just can't putt to save his life. So the issue is that like if he's going to have good irons, he's going to put himself in position to make birdies. And if you catch him on a hot putter day, like he's going to crush for the week. So,
That sounds very GPP only to me, Josh.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like you look at his results. So he was 71 at the Arnold Palmer Open, 38, 6, 11, 30, 17, 32. Like the kid's been pretty consistent coming up. So definitely a guy I like. I don't know, Taco, you got anybody cheap you really like?
Well, let me throw out some, Taco, let me throw these at you because I'm looking at some course histories here. As I scroll down the list, I'm seeing names like Kevin Tway pop up with a couple of good finishes.
He's very much a Texas guy.
Yep.
So is his dad. His dad was a famous golfer, Bob Tway. He's always done extremely well in the Texas wing. Has been god-awful on tour recently. So
Jimmy Walker's a Texas guy too. Right?
So that was one of the guys I had marked up here.
So my concern, Walker is that like, and I've looked pretty long and hard at him, is he's switching out the shafts in his driver this week and all of his woods and playing steel shafts, which is like something that they haven't done on tour since like 1983. But he's been messing with it during this break and seems to like it. So that could either go like one of two ways. It could be really good or it could be like a huge disaster. You know, anytime you're making some sort of equipment change, like I always tend to like shy away.
More likely to go the Rose way.
Right. Like Justin Rose, who was the best golfer in the world, switched to Hanma irons out of Japan, which is like this random company, and his game went to shit. And now he spent a year there and switched back and hopefully figures it out.
He's going to be an interesting one in such bad form, but a recent winner of this very event.
Right. Yeah, no, I he's not going to be owned. I think he's definitely an interesting like GPP Millie Maker type play.
So Taco, give me some other names here in the cheap zone that you think have a shot of opening up some salary possibilities for us. You know, could be, I'm not seeing a lot of course history, even in the super turd level here. So yeah. I think we got to go by something other than that.
Yeah. I'm looking real, real cheap. I guess there's no real reason to, but I don't think a lot of people will. So if you want low owned, some of these real cheap guys, I don't think they're all that much worse than the guys in the middle of the pack.
No.
Like, for example, Xin Jun Zhang, like he's played here once and missed the cut. He was just playing a lot of golf leading up to it. You know, big swing in his odds. He's gone from 300 to 1 to 250 to 1. Good approach numbers. I mean, there are tons of these kinds of plays here.
Doc Redman, he rates out really well.
You just mentioned something I love, and it's that I love. So I'm gonna go to it real quick. Let's see if I can get this to pull up. If I get the drift.
Now I've done some historical searching on drifts, and usually it's a slight positive if you're drifting upwards. If you're drifting downwards, usually that either means it's either just noise, like you're overpriced in the first place, or like something that happened, like a guy is injured, guy has like a baby coming, or some random thing that gets in the way.
I mean, your boy Xin Jun Zhang is here at 17% drift, but you've also got Ryan Harman standing out I love, look at this. So Brian
he's Harman, popped off for me big time. I'm not sure how popular he'll be. Can't remember if this course is helpful for left-handers. He's one of your handful of left-handed golfers. I can't really remember, but yeah, just crazy history here. And he had been getting it together until, well, his last event there at the Arnold Palmer, he missed the cut. But for the last like year or so, he had been really bad. Before that, he was a solid, you know, golfer you could use all the time. He kind of finally started to pick up the pieces of his game before the Corona break. So he's someone that's interesting to me.
There we go. And you got another name here, super cheap, Mackenzie Hughes. A little scary.
But yeah, he's a little iffy.
Yeah, he's a little scary. Harris English, not somebody I've played a whole lot, but look,
he's going to be really popular.
Okay, so he's
yeah, he's chalky.
He's just he's a no touch just because he's probably going to be 20.
His DraftKings points per game on the app is like something insane. You know, I would not play those guys.
It's maddeningly frustrating when you identify someone, you're like, ooh, good course history, lots of drift, oh, good recent form, and then it's like, yeah, everybody else
shit on it
knows that. So I actually have to identify these good plays just to not play them.
Well, and Taco brings up a really good point there that maybe we don't think about enough is that, so he said that Harris English is DK points per game on the app or like on the DraftKings website shows him as being like really high. And, you know, we think that, okay, yeah, we have access to all this information and stuff, but there's
a ton of people sort by points.
Yeah. There's a ton of people who just go in there and sort, or they just look at their app and they plug in six guys that look good, you know? So guys like that tend to get higher owned just because their player card looks good on DraftKings.
Yep. The pretty game log
use will
catch people. Let's see the number, like the top guys are in that aren't like super studs. Just FPPG high to low. Good thing to look at. Okay. So Victor Perez really, really pops there. Cause he's played what, five events. Yeah. It has the European Tour stuff in there too.
Yeah.
And so it's like a runner up from Europe. So he may not be as sneaky as I want him to be. That sucks. Another thing is some guys were added late. Like Sergio Garcia was added to the field just yesterday.
Yep.
There were like 10 guys added that had to redo the whole freaking thing for.
And Sergio's got great history here.
Everybody wants to use Sergio. So, I mean, hey, if you're average points per game.
People do not like to use Sergio. He is a very polarizing figure in the golf world. A lot of people, like my grandma, hated that dude.
Your grandma hated Sergio Garcia?
Grandma hated Sergio Garcia.
Yeah, my wife hates Sergio Garcia, like with a passion.
Loves beef. That was her favorite. Hated Sergio. A lot of people like, hate him. He's a foil. A lot of people hate, like, Patrick Reed, too. He's kind of a DFS darling.
We were at the Ryder Cup in Minnesota. My wife was 6 months pregnant, booing Sergio Garcia as he like walked up the fairway. So that's the level of hate that some people have.
Yeah.
She braved her pregnancy to boo and hiss at Sergio Garcia.
Oh, like she wanted to go more than me.
Did she have money on him once and lose money? Is that what happened?
No, because she's just a diehard like Tiger guy.
Yeah.
And Sergio came over and spit in a cup and everybody hated him.
Was it because he and Tiger had a rivalry?
Yeah, he's done a lot of things.
Yeah.
A lot of things over the years.
I hope it's not because he's from Spain.
No. I mean, the Ryder Cup Europe is hard.
We lost Taco for a second there. He's coming back. But all right. So what are some studs that we can get on, guys? And this is for both of you. That's right, Taco.
I don't know what happened there. I think I hit something.
You know, the little internet issues. What are some studs that we can get on that? Obviously, we could talk about, you know what? Let me do this. We can go back to sort by ownership projection. You can get the idea of who the expensive players that everybody are going to be on is. So give me some names that are sub 5% owned. Okay. So from this group and down here, there's your boy Sergio, 5% or less that we can get on that seem like good plays. Like I'll point out one right here. Rory Sabatini. Looks pretty good here.
The good Rory.
The good, you know, Rory. Good course
history.
Yep.
Very consistent cut maker.
Yep.
Good cut maker. Can I go all in on Rory this week? Just YOLO it. Fuck it. 100%.
You could.
Yeah, you can see long term, he makes 85% of his cuts.
Yeah, he makes a ton of cuts.
His form is in a rough spot before Corona breaks. Like, you look at that recent form there. That's not what we're used to seeing from Rory. You're used to seeing coming like T32 every tournament.
I mean, he missed a cut
there. Yeah.
Emiliano Grillo is a guy who I've played a lot in the past, and I'm seeing here his recent form was pretty awful, but he did
can't
pretty
putt anymore.
The definition of a guy that the stats that we like, he's very good at, pops off at him, especially approach, but cannot putt. Like,
awful.
I'm sure that all of your kids would crush him in putt-putt. No, I would bet money on them.
Terrible at that.
Well, Grillo's worse. Oh.
My kids suck at putt-putt. I crush them. Like I make my kids cry when we play mini golf. I don't care. I'm like, I don't
even. The tiger fist pump.
Oh, I'm like, when they're tapping it, and you know how kids will tap it like 3 or 4 times, like on the way to the hole? I'm like, that's one. That's two. That's three.
Four. Write it down. Mark it zero.
I'm ruthless. No, I teach my kids it's all about winning, number one, and there will be no going easy on anyone. I don't care that they're four. I'm not taking it easy on you. You want to win, you got to win it.
You're backing them down the post, dunking on them?
Yeah, no, there's no mercy. I have no mercy. I'm just like all in. I'm like, oh, yeah, you like that? You know, whatever the game is, I'm all in on it. I'm trying to win that shit. Jordan Spieth, you know, people saying low ownership. Is it going to be low ownership for Spieth here? I mean, this is a home course.
He's been single owned for so many tournaments, or single digit owned for so many tournaments in a row. I think that stops this tournament. Yeah. I think he's like in the low teens. But I think
the hard part is that like every podcast that's out there has had an entire segment on, do you play Jordan Spieth or do you not play Jordan Spieth? So I think that publicly
people are talking really, about him.
Yeah. And that's going to increase his ownership just as a byproduct of that. It's a no for me. I don't think he's going to find his magic beans here, but
Matt Wallace is interesting there. So you get somebody that has a lot of his success over on the European tour, which people aren't really going to account for. And it wasn't really over the last like several months. And like when he plays well, he like freaking wins the tournament.
Very good.
So he has really high upside.
No one's going to be on that guy. No one.
There's a stat I can show you on here, actually. If you go to under field rank splits, you can look at top 10% rate, top 25% rate, and it shows you how often guys have these, you know, big pop off kind of finishes. You just got to watch out for the guys with low sample size. But
well, Nick Watney, what top 25% rate is pretty good for him? That's interesting. Let's go top 10%.
Yeah, Watney's.
Keith Mitchell, who the fuck is that?
He won last year.
You know who Keith Mitchell is?
Yeah, he won last year. Killer Keith.
Oh, this isn't the whole field. I was about to say, it's kind of weird. We still have only the guys under 5%. But yeah, Mitchell definitely a big hit or miss guy.
There we go. I'm scrolled down. So
I'm like, who are these names that are popping up? No.
Okay, so you can see how Rory and Rahm are so much better than the rest of the field when it comes, because they finish top 10 almost every tournament. Like, they're super consistent.
Is the strategy for this just to say, you know what, YOLO it, find the low owned guys? A lot of these guys we've been talking about, Harman and Harry Riggs and Munoz and Christian Bungs, say
Gesundheit.
I'd say that I'm not against using Rory just because he's the best player on the board, even though he's going to be popular, because his floor is so massive, and that's something you're going to kind of be looking for.
So essentially, can I strategically kind of play it so that I'm just kind of mixing in your Rorys, your Rahms, your Simpsons, and even some Brooks and Thomas, you know, GPP.
It is very easy to find value out there this week.
Yep.
Yeah, a lot easier than usual, especially the stronger field.
Johnson, does he suck now?
Kind of.
Yeah.
He used to be like Rory is now.
He was
like
so
very
bad.
Consistent, but yeah, he kind of struggled for a good period of time there. Sometimes it was literally just his putter. Like him and Thomas, I think his recent missed cuts over the last year or so, when they're missing a cut, it's because they're like losing a million strokes putting. And otherwise, they're pretty fine. So I don't mind those guys. But yeah, Dustin Johnson had been like notably struggling, sort of like Justin Rose.
Question comes in. What do we think of Berger, Fitzpatrick, and Horschel as mid-tier guys?
Yeah.
So Berger was red hot fire before he stopped. He was insane. He was doing almost as well as Bryson, like three straight top tens going in. And it was going into the Florida swing, which is like his bread and butter. But skipping that, going to the Texas swing, I don't know. But yeah, Berger should be popular because, again, he's going to be a guy with an extremely pretty game log. And those are some solid tournaments that he had the top 10s at.
Berger has the good course history here and pretty much the good stats for this course as well. Very accurate off the tee.
I don't think he has course history here.
No.
Horschel has good history.
Horschel, yeah.
Berger was popping up either that or accuracy off the tee. One of the stats we were looking at, Berger was coming up like as a major guy. All right. Here's another one. No attendance from fans. Do you think there's going to be extra penalties or
no?
Players looking for their balls. I mean, this is what happens.
They have laser shot. They should have shot tracking. Yeah, so we confirm that. Like,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So they'll have lasers following that.
Like when I play around, I'm just letting you know. When I play around,
you gotta have a whole case of balls.
I like to bring two sleeves. You know what I'm saying? I like to have at least a six pack. But a six pack does not get me through a full course. That's more like 12.
With the 3 minute rule now, yes, it had changed that. So if you can't find your ball within 3 minutes and you have to drop a new ball.
Oh my gosh. Then I have to bring
a PJ rule.
Yeah. And this course is pretty wide open in the sense that you're not going to, there's not like a bunch of water hazards. It's tree line. Not super deep rough. They're not going to have too much trouble finding their balls.
That's what she said.
Because they hit forward. That.
That was the closest. Yeah.
I don't like Fitzpatrick though. I don't trust a guy like that here. I'll play him next week.
Really overpriced.
Yeah, I'll play him at Heritage next week, which is like where he has a home.
I think here what the takeaway on the entirety of the course is going to be is basically first event in a very long time. Everybody's out of practice. Beware of chalk. Yep. Beware of chalk. Beware of the golfers that the fucking optimizer gives you, because there's a decent chance those will be chalk.
Right.
So you know that some of the guys here that are really good at driving accuracy, they're not the best at scoring. Like Stricker, for example. He can hit a million pars. That dude is terrible for DraftKings scoring. I don't care how many cuts he makes. Some guys just don't have that kind of upside. Like some guys just are never going to even attempt an eagle. They're never, ever going to try for that. So driving accuracy can be kind of tricky to look at. You do have some good guys. Like it's mostly geriatrics up here, but you got some guys like Doc Redman that are younger and just have a really solid, he's hitting almost 300 with that driving accuracy.
You look at driving accuracy, you're right. It's just old guys who can't hit it very well.
And the hard part is, too, is that, guys like last year at this event, we had Kevin Na, who hits it far, like 250 yards off the tee, and Tony Finau, who can hit it 325. And the reality is, though, is that when Na's hitting driver, Tony Finau is pulling out two iron, and he's going to be inherently more accurate with that two iron. So these longer guys, we shouldn't necessarily avoid them because they're going to be able to club down and play some different. Like Finau typically just plays better at courses where he doesn't have to hit driver. You got to take it with a little bit of grain of salt.
Sometimes you get the driver out of their hand and they play a little better. Looking at you, Gary Woodland.
It's kind of like another guy I like this week.
Telling Griffey to just go for contact, maybe not swing for the fences every single time.
And that's where my
some guys.
That's where my issue with Bryson is this week is he's been playing great, but the guy's been just put on 40 pounds of muscle and thinks it's a long drive contest every time out here. And is that gonna get him into trouble out on the course, if he pulls driver every hole?
You like Rahm, it does the same thing.
I know, but Rahm's better.
Exact player. Same thing. He is.
When you sort by fantasy scoring projection, this tab, and then you look over to the salaries.
That's just straight up scores.
Funny. What's that?
Yep. That's straight up scores. And Lanto has been, this is his first year. He's played a bajillion events. Dude has been awesome. Dude has so many top 15 finishes.
But he's a par 5 scorer.
Yeah. Not the best course for him here, but.
But I mean, he does show up here in a, he shows up on as
he's in play
for a guy who scores well.
Yeah.
Compared to the people around him.
Sure does.
What about Maverick?
I'd rather use projected fantasy points per round when looking at this. That's DK centric.
I love McNeely. Okay.
Where is that? This one?
Just that one. Yeah. I think so far this season, for some reason, McNealy and Matthew Neesmith has kind of like become the same person. They play the same events. They're priced around the same. They have the a similar rate of success. I don't know. Sometimes two plays just kind of mesh into each other like right. that. And you know what I'm doing, I find myself doing the same thing again this week. Don't mind at all.
I'm like writing down all of these names. I'm like, all right, Matthew.
McNealy was former number one world amateur too.
McNealy, mm-hmm. baby. Circled it. Berger, McNealy, Harmon, Harry Higgs, Munoz, Gesundheit, Lanto.
Love me some Gesundheit this week, core play.
Me too.
Christian Gesundheit.
Oh, that Gesundheit. I still like him a lot, yes. I don't sneeze on that play at all.
My
allergies have been awful. Fuck, I've been sneezing like crazy.
What?
Ooh.
Dude, you could get yourself killed for fucking sneezing, especially in Minnesota.
I don't go anywhere.
Do not leave your house.
I can sneeze all I want.
Get killed for that over there.
Yeah.
Go to Staten Island to a supermarket. You sneeze. You're a little different Staten Island.
Yeah, it's a little different. I've had like 12 cases here.
In Staten Island, you sneeze, you're dead. Like they, like Karens from the neighborhood are beating you. It's nuts over here.
I'm interested in, like, they've been, I don't know if you guys have been following along, but they've been, you know, they sent out tests to these guys and their caddies. Now they're getting tested every day at the event. It's, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if that affects guys.
Yeah. You know what? We had it with UFC. And yeah. Golf is such an individual sport.
Right.
It's really ridiculous that they canceled it to begin with, to be quite honest. I get it. It's really great to have it back. I have to say.
I'm excited.
It's just exciting to have live action. Guys, for those of you who joined us for this breakdown, you know, it was a little light probably on picks and a little heavier on, hey, how do we use the research station to kind of figure shit out?
One other feature I want to show on the research station that I personally love is the Stat Cruncher. And this is a really cool tool where, A, you can get golfer ratings, but B, my favorite part about it is, if we want, we can adjust these numbers to our satisfaction to sort of spit out different things than maybe what the field might be on. One thing I will say is I've studied it and it is perfectly acceptable to use these ratings
instead of projections to create your lineups. Yep. So
if anybody ever wants to use this and create their own customization, like what were the important things? Give me a couple things that we said were very important. Like
you could even just use this tool to like if you wanted to, you could just zero it all out, put like one on two on driving accuracy, one on driving distance or something, make like a custom stat for that.
Yeah,
you can use that for all sorts of different things.
Or jack it up even further. Like you said, if we said okay, greens and regulation are important, I might add to that weight, right?
Yeah.
I can just jack it up and it's gonna change all of these numbers and give me look, it all just changed. Made Rory even better, but it all just changed. So for people,
yeah, you can customize as you please.
Like right now, let's say I don't want to be chalk. One of the things I could de-emphasize is the odds because everybody's looking at the odds. Everybody.
Yeah.
So if I de-emphasize the odds a little bit, now I've just noticed how this is changing every time I do this.
So let's say I'm like, listen, I want to be less chalk, but not a fucking moron. Right, so
you could do like a cash model and have like made cut percentage high, bogey avoidance or high, or you know, approach whatever, and then have maybe for example a GPP model where you put more emphasis on like fantasy points gain, projected DraftKings points, driving distance, because usually distance is better for GPP, accuracy is better for cash. You can do a lot with it.
Are right here in the cruncher, and this is one of my favorite. It really is, Taco, one of my favorite things that you've built. I love using this.
This is one of the oldest things I built. This thing is straight out of 2015. But it's
you
been
know that this is why I found steady. You and hired you for DFS Army. You don't know. I found. All right, Josh, I'm going to let you in on a story.
A lot of people.
You found Taco on Reddit.
Yes, Taco was making the Stat Cruncher and putting it out on Reddit, and I was playing PGA, and I would go to Reddit every week and look for Taco's post so I can get to the Stat Cruncher and do this for my lineups. And when we started expanding out into other sports, that's when I was like, there's that dude on Reddit who makes that awesome stat cruncher thing. I'm like, let me DM him.
Yeah, I was actually Taco
came to DFS Army. I was like, hey, how about if I pay you to make that? Because you're putting that shit out for free.
See, I used to be the administrator in their Slack group for that subreddit. And let me tell you, DFS Army is 10 times better to be around than a public DFS Slack chat channel. I can't stress that enough. That was crazy town.
What do I say about the public? Fuck the public.
Right.
Not too much, though. You will get lots of infections.
No, oh yeah, not well. You know what I'm saying. Fuck the public. This is about DFS Army.
Hanger wants to know who tests positive first. Like, if I had to bet, like my life savings, I would bet that Jason Day is the first positive coronavirus test.
Is on Jason Day kind of like a little bit of a whore? Like, what?
Yeah, it's a baby.
Can Oosthuizen come in second?
Yeah, no, that's.
Day is happily married, mind you.
Yeah, if you look at my notes, I have
by LeBron James,
Louis second.
I feel like we just need to reason to withdraw all the time. Yeah.
You know who? John Daly probably tests positive already.
Hey, his kid's gonna be a stud.
Really? I actually think John Daly would die if he got the corona.
Daly is probably like 2 inches into like a cushion that is settled in at a blackjack table somewhere that he's been sitting at for 3 days. Starting to meld with the chair.
Cigarettes.
No change for him.
Beer and alcohol. All right. So
I wanted to kind of finish with showing everybody the Stat Cruncher because I don't know that a lot of people know that it's there or how to use it.
That's a great tool.
Guys, this is my favorite tool for golf that we have. Of course, the research station's amazing. Actually, my favorite tool is Josh's notes. But I mean, beyond that, Taco's
Vince
entire research station.
I'm going to, so I got people asking in the chat about like randomization when running on 150 on the DS. So like my chalk donkey article tomorrow or I always use a super high number, but like for my chalk donkey video tomorrow, I'm going to talk a little bit about the course and then I'm going to go through and run like 20 max in the DS and talk about how I set it up for that. So be on the lookout for that.
Yes. A lesson in how to set up the DOM station to run 20 max. This didn't replace the chalk donkey. This is just bonus coverage. How much salary will you leave? All right, Travis, I'm going to answer this for you. I saw a stat credit, quote, someone on Twitter, don't remember who, that put out that said something like 66% of the last Millie Maker winners fell between 49.9 and 49.3. Right? So that's the sweet spot. I guess it was like 10% hit the perfect 50, and then you know, another like 20-ish% came in below like 49.3. Now, don't quote me exact on those numbers. Josh, maybe you know a little bit better, but
it was something like that. I could find it and retweet it here in a little bit.
Yeah, I saw. Was it your Twitter? I saw it on Twitter somewhere.
Somebody had. I think Red Kachik had it. Who he won a Millie Maker.
Yeah, it was one of those guys. So I want to credit whoever that was. But basically, most of the winners fall between like 49.3. and 49.9, looking for exactly 50K. I would almost purposefully avoid 50K. But again, at the flip side is, I don't mind splitting a million. Like, all right, okay. You know, if I get a piece, I always find it odd that people are upset about
splitting. I doubt that anybody splits a millionaire this week. Golf has less splits than I think any daily fantasy sport. Maybe like a 12 or 13 game NBA slate might be more unique, but even that has more chalk generally. I think that PGA has to be the sport, since just because of the number of golfers in the field, that oftentimes your lineups are unique. Like most of your lineups are unique when you mass enter, and that's not the case in other sports.
Yeah.
One of the things that's going for it.
For that same reason, I would be using three uniques at least.
Yep.
Even four is okay. And no matter what you do, I think you still have to kind of find, I would say, Josh, let me ask you this on your 20 entry max video. Are you finding one or two guys to kind of go all in out on and say, you know what, YOLO?
I'm
living or dying with this.
I think that the biggest thing that you need to do is just at the beginning, like when you're getting the DS set up, you just got to uncheck everybody and then just go back through and start building guys in. And then, you know, hey, let's see how this looks with 15 guys in. What does it look like in with 20? And you know what I mean? Just try to find that player pool. But I really usually I don't necessarily set a min, but I'll jack up the projections of like my core guys.
Yeah.
You know, because like with my four core, you can fit them all in a lineup together, and that's what I kind of try to do. So I'll jack up those guys a little bit, and then I'll end up, you know, once depending on the week. Like this week, I'm not going to necessarily go all in. Even in a 20 max, I might get like 60, 70. But there's I'll be heavy. Like, you know, I think yeah. in a 20 max, you have to do that. Like you can't have these 45 player pools in a 20 max because you're just spreading yourself out so thin. Like you got to make take a stand and say, hey, these are my guides this week, and you know, I'm going to give myself a chance to win. Like, right. I ain't here to min cash. You know what I mean? Like I'm here to win this contest, and you got to kind of build like that. I think that a lot of people build like, you know what I mean? Like, that's just the reality. Like if you're trying to win the contest, you got to build a certain way.
People approach the 20 max in the wrong way.
Yep.
It's their only entry. So they want to get a lot of chalk. What you should be doing is putting your high dollar entry, your small contest entry, cash, whatever you want to call it, get your chalky favorites in there, and then get your sneaky plays in on the 20 max or in the mini on the 20 max, understanding that I'm going to win a tournament here. This isn't the only money I've put in. When it's the only money you've put into the contest, 99 times out of 100, you're going to lose fucking money because the 20 max is a loser almost every time you enter it.
Yep. And that's the thing is like, if I put a bunch of, if I put 20 lineups in, and let's say I cash every single one for all min cash, like there was a problem in my build. You know what I mean? Like I didn't build to win, and you got to kind of look at that sometimes and change the way you do. So like what I do is like, if I'm playing the 20 max and I'm playing the mini max or whatever, like I just use those to go buck wild, right? I'll go 100% on a guy in one and 100% another guy. I typically build like a three entry max, three lineups that I feel really confident about. They're a little bit different. Maybe a guy's in one or two. I'll enter those in those smaller winnable contests that you don't need to be crazy for. I'll back them up in cash so that in case I bubble a GPP, I'm still winning my money back. And then I'll go buck wild in like the 150 in the 20 maxes.
I love it. All right. So let's wrap it up here, guys. For everybody watching right now, remember to like and subscribe to the channel. I should have said this at the beginning. I always forget. Like and subscribe if you want to be notified when we go to live streams. Because you know,
like right now,
yeah, like you know, we don't get a lot of notification. It will if you don't
catch it.
Get the notifications. Stuff. You will not be notified. Now, Taco, what else do we have in store for PGA this week? We got the research station rolling, the Dom station good to go. Josh coming out with the Chalk Donkey. A video tomorrow where he's going to really get in depth with player picks. I've got a list of names: Berger, Harmon, Gesundheit, Munoz, Lanto, and McReely. What else do we need? What else we have going on this week, Taco?
So I'll be getting my notes up tonight. I've been juggling with NASCAR. NASCAR has come up on Wednesday as well, so I'm pretty busy.
Taco, notes are happening this week. It's unbelievable.
Right,
of course.
How do you have every time? Week.
My notes are really, really good this season so far. Yeah, I had like a super ultra hot start in the West Coast swing.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to mention real quick, a way that I like to make my player pool, honestly, is going on the main page, sorting different stats I think are important by like worst to best, and then like eliminating guys under a certain threshold. Like, hey, if you're hitting less than 50% of fairways, you're out of here. Just going stat by stat, doing that until you got like 20 guys left and look at them and go, hey, those are my dudes. So you can either do it that way or you could do it the other way, like you guys are explaining. A lot of different ways you can do it. But yeah, we've got that. We've got, of course, the showdowns happening every week or every round, the weekend events
Josh,
as well.
Will you be doing notes for all of the showdowns?
I will.
Man.
You will. Guys, he's the man for them.
Guys, Josh's fucking showdown notes are money in the day three showdown? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, day three is our game. All right, that's my day.
The best day.
Our game.
Day one's been okay lately. I don't know.
I see on Twitter, like, this is like a known thing. This is like on Twitter, it's like people from other sites are like, day three, Josh, no, DFS up north. No, it's like it is known far and wide.
Yeah, we do okay. Yeah. All lock tour was a little iffy, but I'll.
You guys
I'll
just barely made the cut. It's playing morning.
I love like it. That. So we got notes coming out, all of the showdowns. There's so much golf. I love the showdown. The single day golf is better. No cut. All you got to do is worry about guys who score well. Sungjae Im all day.
Yeah.
Sungjae season once again.
And always Sungjae.
Sungjae.
He's broken through and now he's ready to go to the moon.
Fucking, thing. So, all right. For us, I know Josh has to go.
Let's call it a day. More cheers, content guys. Coming, everyone. Thanks for joining us, Taco. Thank you, Josh. Thank you for showing me the ropes in PGA. I'm going to play it and crush awesome. It. Pick a millie down. DFS Army, helmets up.
Let's do it.
Hold on. Let's get the theme song. Let's go out to the theme, let's baby. Take care, everyone.
Got the best coaches in the game. We really ain't playing. We regroup up in the Slack chat where the coaches debrief. We be piecing these puzzles, occupy the chunk of the pie. Ain't no lie when we hit the block. Helmets casket is got. You be seeing helmet after helmet, helmet after helmet. First place, second place, fifth place, eighth place, 12th place, 15, 16, 20. So many helmets, you got blurred vision. We got.